You're listening to the Mojo Matters podcast, episode 25. Hi, it's Jo here. And just before we get onto the show, I want to let you know that the doors to my Mojo membership are now open, a place where you get to hunt down your mojo and keep it so that you can earn more, achieve more and live more. Head over to my Instagram profile, jobritton.mojo, and check out the Mojo membership link in my bio. And now on to the main part of the show. You're listening to the Mojo Matters podcast with me, your host, Jo Britton. Your mojo is your energy, your enthusiasm and your motivation so that you've got the ability to get results for your personal and professional life without freaking out and burning out. Tune in for practical advice on how to find your mojo and keep it. Welcome back to another episode of Mojo Matters. On today's show, we're going to be talking about high performance and doing it your own way, taking lessons from someone who has been extremely successful in an industry which is notoriously tough, the recruitment industry, an industry in which it's extremely competitive and which it's generally been accepted that you need to be robust and really persistent. It's an industry where you need excellent communication skills, be really target driven, be good at multitasking, have loads of confidence and strong sales skills, and not everyone cuts it. So it's really easy to lose your mojo and to burn yourself out in the process when you're working in highly pressurized environments. So my guest on this episode of Mojo Matters is Steve Guest, author of Top Biller, The Life of a Recruiter. And Steve had spent 14 years recruiting top talent in the construction and property industry, working for large global recognized recruitment brands, as well as smaller recruitment businesses. And he's a high performer and achiever, always pushing boundaries, inspiring change, innovation and growth. But Steve will tell you that he doesn't fit the typical mold of a recruiter in his industry. And now he also spends his time mentoring and coaching and training recruitment consultants. So in this episode, we're going to be exploring how you can maximize your potential and performance by being true to yourself and what you need to look out for in terms of signs you may be pushing yourself in ways that may lead to an empty mojo cup and burnout, particularly if you're working in a highly pressurized environment or role. So Steve, welcome to Mojo Matters.
Hi there. Thank you very much for inviting me onto the show.
And we're both suffering a little bit today, aren't we? Because it's hay fever season. So we're both a bit sniffly and we may cough. How are you feeling?
I'm all right. I'm bearing up under the strain.
Brilliant. Okay, so can we just start by exploring your story? Because recruitment is a really challenging sector to work in. It's highly pressured. As I said before, you need to be really robust and it's target driven, isn't it? And you always say you don't fit that typical like salesy mold. So can you tell us, how did you get into recruitment in the first place? And how, if you don't fit the typical recruitment mold, how have you managed to be so successful?
Okay, so my other half, my lovely wife Emma, I met, we were holiday reps coming up to 21 years ago. And when we returned to the UK, Emma wanted to be a recruitment consultant, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do, if I'm honest. And I dabbled in recruitment, didn't enjoy it too. I think it was just too high powered. It was too salesy straight after working as a holiday rep. And I got into construction buying, and I worked for a landscape garden company dealing with site teams. Progressed to working for Severn Trent Water, a water utility in the Midlands. Got qualified. So I'm M6 qualified. I was a strategic commodity buyer. And to put that into context, so one of the contracts I looked after was for gunmetal fittings that joined pipe work under the ground. And to negotiate that, I would break down the elements of gunmetal into its raw materials, shipping costs and everything else. You imagine the size of the spreadsheet when you're working out elements of costs and then negotiating with the people that deliver them items. So I enjoyed it. I enjoy the detail. I enjoy spreadsheets. I enjoy getting to the grips with all the little components and parts. Whilst I was working as a buyer, I found that I was constantly and consistently being let down by salespeople. So they would promise the earth and not deliver. They would arrange meetings and not turn up. They would tell me they would call at the end of the week and you wouldn't receive the call. And it was very frustrating as a buyer and for someone like me, where I like logic, I like things to happen when they should do. And I trust the fact that that is what happens. And I'd got to the point really where I was enjoying the role, but I felt that I needed to go somewhere where I could earn or have a greater earning potential for the amount of work that you put in. Mm. And that particular role, you picked up a basic salary, and it was decent, but that's all I ever got. Didn't matter how much I negotiated off a contract. So I thought it was probably time to go back into recruitment. At the time, Emma, my wife, was doing really well. She was the top performing temp consultant. And I went to go and work for the same brand, but go and do perm recruitment. And I thought, naturally, recruiting for purchasing staff is the next logical progression because I understand how a buyer works. Went for my interview. First interview went really well. They liked me. The feedback was excellent. Invited me to play in their five-a-side football charity tournament after my second interview, which was the following week. Went to the second interview to meet the managing director, and I got the feedback that I wasn't suitable. I didn't possess the character traits they look for in a recruiter. I wasn't loud enough, didn't come across confident enough, and they felt I didn't have the potential to be a good salesperson. And I was sat there, if I'm honest, it's probably one of the biggest turning points for me, because A, I'm not used to being rejected. Certainly at interview, I was always used to getting offered positions. And I was sat there thinking, well, I can do it. I know I can do it. I might not be loud. I might not be brash. I might not be flamboyant, but I knew I could do it. And I think that element of rejection, I actually left the interview and then went to another part of the same business, but a different brand, and said, basically, take me on and I'll prove every hour of every working day that they were wrong not to take me on. And that's pretty much the catalyst for what started me off.
Oh, wow. So really you use that rejection as fuel, that initial rejection as fuel. And maybe it just goes to show as well, like, so you didn't give up, and that feedback you used in a really constructive way to say, I'm going to do everything it takes to prove you guys wrong. And so what was the reaction there then? They took you on, and what progressed?
Yeah, so they took me on. Obviously, the interview went reasonably well. I was the quickest trainee consultant to get promoted, the quickest consultant to senior. And that kind of progressed. As far as I'm aware, I still hold the regional record that was set in 2007, 2008 for number of perm placements and highest billing month. Every so often, I used to email the MD, basically just saying, look what you could have had. I think that was more... I think up to that point, I was probably never that person. I was never that person that was out to necessarily prove people wrong. I was the quiet, unassuming, hardworking, diligent person that just sets out to do a good job. Yeah. But I think it was a turning point where I wasn't used to people saying you can't do something. And I think it lit something where I was sat there thinking, do you know what? I can do this. And it's okay to be different. It's okay to not fit the personality traits of what you expect. Because as far as my background was, the personality traits of a salesperson were disappointing and generally had let me down as a buyer anyway. Mm. So why would you want to be that person or have the same traits as many of the salespeople I'd kind of had dealings with, I knew I could offer something different. I knew my traits would actually add value if I stuck to who I am and how I work. I just needed someone to have that little bit of faith that it's okay to be different, and actually I can prove that I can do it.
Yeah, I've picked up on a couple of things that I've heard which resonate really strongly with me. You talk about like value and adding value in your own, I believe, once you kind of look within you and identify what are my core values, you know, what really matters most to me here, how can I leverage my values in whatever situation to propel me forward? Mm-hmm. What matters most to you then? What are your values, would you say, and how do you use those?
My personal core values, I'm one of six children, single parent family, and my mom, you would probably class in this day and age, was strict. She was fair, but strict. And it was the kind of, I suppose, traditional core values. It's the honesty, it's integrity, it's to treat people with respect. It's to do things honorably. And for me, as I kind of mentioned earlier, I've always been a hard worker. Mm. I'm not necessarily born, I suppose, intelligent, but I would work to understand. I'm classed as a high C in a DISC profile, so I am Mr. Logic. I want to know all the details before I necessarily commit to anything, and that's just me. So I would never do anything where someone would feel offended, or I would, I suppose, do something to the detriment of someone else. As a buyer, when I was at Severn Trent, the training was really good, and they put us on 2-3 day training courses. And quite often it was how to negotiate, how to understand another person's perception, how you understand potential pain points or areas that you can negotiate. And I think if you flip that to the other side from a sales perspective, when I first started recruiting, my main aim was to try and find the pain points of my clients, people paying the invoices. What is it that's got them to a point where they feel let down, or they feel like they don't get the service they should be for the payment perhaps that they're paying? And a lot of it was down to really simple, basic manners and common courtesy. Mm. It was, if I say I'm going to call you on a Thursday, I'll tell you what, I'll call you on a Thursday. If I'm going to get CVs by the end of the week, then that's what I'll do. If I come out and meet you and I take a job brief, I'm going to go and find candidates that match the brief. I'm not just going to guess and think, well, they'll do, I'll just send them over because I promised them some people. If the market isn't offering what they need, then you offer a consultative approach and you say, if you're really going to hold out for that person, you might be waiting a long time. Have you thought about this? And I think just being honest and delivering on what you say you're going to deliver on, whether it's good or bad, you're open and communicative to make sure they understand what you're trying to do.
And that is just an amazing example of how you've used your values to your strength and success, really, isn't it? And I think the thing about values, what I've discovered, is that when you live and work to your values, then you experience much more positive emotions in your life. And when you're in a much more optimistic, positive frame of mind and you're feeling good, then anything's possible, isn't it? So I think that's an amazing takeaway for people that are listening who think, well, you know, I've been pigeonholed in this particular role, and actually I've got this stuff within me, but I know I can do like something different. I can do it, but everybody believes I should be, you know, fit a totally different mold. I think you've just perfectly explained how you can leverage the stuff within you to succeed. And also, you were just talking about, so I love DISC. I'm a DISC practitioner as well. So you're saying you're a high C, logical, rational, a bit more reserved maybe in nature, like to think things through. I'm like opposite side of that. So I'm like a high DI, push forward, probably act before I think, maybe a bit loud at times, you know, probably fit the typical, you know, stereotype of a salesperson's role. So just tell me also, because one of the things I think that I'm hearing also is about how you've leveraged your strengths as well and use those in a context which, you know, you probably associate on a DISC profile. Typically salespeople are the complete opposite end of the chart on that. What sort of strengths have you leveraged and how have you done that?
I think, as you've said, most recruiters I've worked with, managed, competed against, are very outwardly relationship building, conversation. You can quite happily leave a bit of a trail of destruction behind them because there's no thought, rhyme or reason behind how they've got to where they've got to. And they might be highly successful. That's not anything where I'm being detrimental to them. There's some excellent consultants, but there's no process, procedure or strategy behind how they work or what they do. And I think if you look at that from a customer base or a client base, actually the review from a client or candidate could be very much that discussion. Well, I speak to this consultant and they're very sporadic when I hear from them. It could be every 6-12 months. Yeah. I only hear from them when they've got a great candidate. There's no relationship building necessarily. And I just wanted to be systematic because it helps the way that I am. So I set the agenda, how often I'm going to call, when I'm going to call, why would I be having that conversation? What's the reasons behind it? What's the benefit to the client or candidate? And I set the stall out, which makes me accountable. But it also makes me highly reliable. Therefore, the clients and candidates that I work with get used to the fact that I just keep turning up. It's a consistent structure to what I do. And everybody gets treated the same, whether they're a graduate or whether they're a director. And because I do things in the right way and I'm ethical and I'm honest in the approach, I don't overpromise. So nobody gets off the phone thinking Steve's necessarily the best recruiter on the planet. But what I've given them is an open and honest review of what I'm going to do next. And then we have an update point at which I go back to them and say, this is what the market said, or this is where I've got to. We mentioned quite early on the turnover of a recruiter across pretty much all industries and sectors is 6 months.
Yeah.
It has a really high drop-off rate.
Yeah.
So part of my thinking was the inconsistency in terms of service is always going to be there because the drop-off rate of the individuals is so high. So if I could just stick to my guns, I could just keep turning up. Even if I get past 6-8 months, I know I'm better than the norm and I can become more reliable.
Yeah. And also what I heard you talk, you know, consistency and accountability, I heard you talk about are two things that I see a lot with high achieving, successful people. Like there's this thing, isn't there, out there where we believe everything on social media sometimes or in the press of these overnight sensations. You know, it's like I've scaled my business overnight and, you know, 7-figure business owner, and actually it probably takes like 10 years to do that and you don't see that bit. It's really rare, isn't it, that they're overnight successes. And so what these successful people do have in common is consistency and accountability.
Yeah, it's so important. And for me, again, I keep coming back to it, but it's just my logic. It's what makes sense to me. And I don't understand how you couldn't have a process in place to provide what is a service-orientated business. And if you set about to find what the pain points are and you can put a solution to them. So quite often if you ask clients, if they use recruitment, what's gone wrong or why have you been unhappy in the past? It's because of overpromise, underdeliver. Continuity, it's lack of consistency. The recruiters change, so there's no accountability and they're going through the same process again with somebody different. And I'm sat there right at the start of my journey thinking, if I can just get the basics right, if I can stick to my kind of core values and the way that I approach things, I'm already a step ahead of the majority of the market anyway. And now I've just got to go and find the right people.
Oh, yeah.
Find the right opportunities for the individuals.
So how do you, so, I mean, consistency, it's a habit. And this is something that I talk a lot about in terms of helping fill your mojo cup, you know, helping you navigate every day, because people get overwhelmed and like, it's like, okay, create habits. Which habits can you stop doing, if you like, that are getting in your way? And which are the habits that you need to create around maybe being consistent that are going to fuel you? What tips do you have around helping? Because it's, I mean, I find it really difficult to be consistent. So probably to do with my disc profile, it's like, you know, oh, I like, and you know, I like some shiny new things and be curious and creative and ideas. And so consistency for me is really, really challenging. What tips would you have for people to be consistent?
What I've said to other recruiters that are perhaps very similar in terms of their profile as yours is you're never going to change that personality. And if you change it to a degree where I say, right, you've got to match me day for day in everything I do, you'll soon get bored and it will take away the elements of what makes you you.
Yeah.
So for me, it's about the consistency is you set things up. So I have a 12-month plan and it's broken into month plans, week plans, day plans, and then almost sales session plans to the nth degree. And you'd look at it and think, oh. But it's about having something that motivates or fuels you. So if you can have a week plan and you've broken your days into sessions, so from a sales perspective, it might be Monday morning, I'm going to do some business development and go and find some new clients. Monday afternoon, I'm going to work on a candidate and try and find them a new position. And you break them down to specific sections. Once you've got that session, so the morning session of business development, it's about breaking them into smaller parts again. So for the first hour, between 9 and 10, I'm going to make 5 calls and they're going to be to civil and groundworks contractors in and around the West Midlands. And it's got it to a point where, okay, so at 10 o'clock, you can have a 5-10 minute break, go and have a cup of tea, walk around the block, whatever it might be, and come back. And then you set yourself up for the next hour. So that you don't have that kind of overwhelming sensation of, oh, my week's so mapped out, I've got no space to do anything I want to do, or I don't want to get redirected over here and I don't want to get distracted here. Part of the problem, certainly with a lot of the recruiters I've worked with, is the distraction. So Monday morning, I speak to 5 new clients, which is what I set out to do. The third client I spoke to need a project QS to start next week. And they suddenly dart off and go and do that role because that's suddenly taken over their morning.
Yeah.
And then they spend the rest of the day doing it, speak to the client at the end of the day, and the client says, oh, I've actually managed to fill it. Because they've got so excited about the role, they didn't pre-qualify it properly. They've gone off tact. They then set their Tuesday thinking, well, I wasted time yesterday. I'll probably do a little bit of what I didn't do yesterday. The plan's gone out the window. The consistency's gone and the focus has gone.
Yeah, and that's actually, I mean, I think that's just not just recruitment, is it? That's, you know, we're overwhelmed with distractions, aren't we? Like, whatever it is that we're doing, whatever job we're doing, you know, you've got, like, for me, it's like all the WhatsApp notifications, email notifications, somebody calls you and you kind of, and then you feel like the day's run away with you and the day's been in control of you rather than you being in control of your day. So I love what you're saying about, it's like having structure and schedule to help with consistency, isn't it? But breaking it down, because I heard you say something about it's what motivates you. And that's massively powerful for motivation. So like the neurobiology and neurochemistry around, you know, keeping yourself motivated, a lot of it is about what's my next step? You know, it's like, and tick off, I've done that task, because that gives you like a dopamine hit and it's like the reward chemical and you can keep going. So I think that's like a really practical piece of like gold advice, really. Structure your day, keep consistent, inhibit distractions.
It's having those simple things. So I'll give you an example. I had, this happens quite a lot. So a relatively junior recruiter, And quite often at the end of the day, I'll be like, how's your day gone? They said, oh, I've been so busy. I've got so much done today. And when you actually start to look into what they've done, what's happened is it's a busy office. So you've got lots of salespeople, lots of incoming calls. This individual will pick up the phone because they're quick on the phone because they're busy. And they'll have a conversation. They'll pass a message on. They'll pass a note to someone else. And they get through the day and they haven't been off the phone. And I'm not saying they haven't worked hard, because they have. But they haven't worked hard in the areas that they need to be working hard in.
Yeah.
And it could be just as simple as having a tally mark of, if you're doing outbound sales and all you're doing all day is picking up the phone and passing messages on, if you're not doing any outbound sales. So unless you're focused and have a specific time, I would say, right, write down 1 to 10 every morning, and your aim is to make 10 calls a day, for example. Every time you make a call, you tick off the number. So you know where you are in relation to your day, and you know how productive it's been. When you get to lunch, if you've made 3 calls, you know you've got a really hectic afternoon because you've got to go and find 7. If you've had obviously a great morning, you've got up to 8 or 9, you know whether you can go and smash your daily target and keep going, or you've got time to be able to focus on something else that you might need to do.
Yeah.
And it can be just really simple of putting a valuation on your own time and how you spend your days. And not a lot of people do it.
No, absolutely. And it's funny you say this. I'm just going through a similar exercise myself that my mentor sort of showed me to do. And he talks about putting a value against the task. So like £10 tasks, £100 tasks, £1,000 tasks. And every time you do one, you allocate it so that you can see where in your day you're spending your time. And is it like proportionate to the value? Because a lot of it, you're spot on. You can feel like you've had a really, really busy day, but busy, maybe not doing the right things. And then your mojo cup drains because you kind of think, oh, well, actually, what have I achieved? You know, having that like sense of achievement, I think is like really important to keep your motivation going as well. So we've kind of talked a little bit really around overwhelm, because I think when, you know, I'm really into kind of like how the brain then and body responds to things like overwhelm. And for me, if you're feeling overwhelmed, you end up in your limbic brain. So that I call Frankenstein. So we've spoken about this before, haven't we? It's kind of like the fast, automatic, efficient, life-saving gift that we have, but actually can run amok and make us feel, you know, angry, frustrated, emotional. And when that happens, we're not able to think clearly, logically, and access what I call Einstein, so our prefrontal cortex that helps us do all those, like, you know, navigate the world productively and problem solve and be creative and be compassionate. And I'm an amazing person and all of that kind of thing. So I think, you know, what you're saying is really sensible. Like sometimes things get, people overcomplicate things, don't they? And actually it's really as simple as sticking stuff down, you know, like task, tick those things off and feel that stuff. So I love that. Now, something that you said right at the start, we were talking about rejection. So like when you first applied in recruitment, you were rejected, that fueled you to keep going. But also I imagine like in sales, you face an awful lot of rejection, a lot of no's, don't you? And generally throughout life, rejection is one of those things that, you know, we might have a fear of rejection and that holds us back. So tell me a bit more about that. How can people overcome this? Maybe this setback, this, you know, sense of rejection when it holds them back. What kind of strategies do you use to help you keep going?
Rejection in recruitment comes in all shapes, forms, and sizes, and it's notoriously difficult to manage. When I first started recruiting, when somebody didn't turn up for an interview or didn't turn up on their start date, told you one thing and did completely the opposite, you used to take it really personally. And quite often, recruitment, I'm sure you know, is a whiteboard industry. Everything's on the board, everything is shown. So you've got the fees on the board, you've got your interviews and everything else. And I would have a fee that would drop out for whatever reason, and I would generally have left the fee on the board. Sometimes it'd be a week after they've decided it's not for them. And every morning I'd walk into work, I'd look at the fee, and it's destroyed my day before I've even got to my desk.
Yeah.
And it was a really bad way of handling that process, because it was just a constant reminder. And I think it was probably 6 to 8 months in, I just got to the point where the moment it was gone, it was off, it was wiped off the board. It might have meant I had the walk around the block, or went and grabbed a coffee. I took 10, 15 minutes out just to kind of collect my emotions and my thoughts, because it is frustrating. It can get you really annoyed, because when you're dealing with people and in recruitment, you're dealing with a client and a candidate, which are both human, which can both be random at the best of times, which can decide things on the whim of a conversation or off the back of something you're not in control of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once you get to grips with that, and you know over time some placements will work and some won't, and you just have to take the fact that as long as you're getting more placements to work than not work, it will be a good kind of career, and you can work on elements that will allow you to, I suppose, curb the drop-off rate. And I think that comes with time. It comes with your gut instinct quite often, certainly these days. So for me, my biggest tip is to understand if there was something better in the process you could have done to have seen something that is likely to happen further along. So a potential counteroffer. Are they really telling you their kind of true feelings about why they're unhappy? Have you challenged it enough?
Mm.
Have you really pushed to get to the root of why someone's unhappy in their work or why they're looking to move? Or is it simply just a basis to try and get more money from their current employer? And even still, I've had this year, there's lots of insecurities given the current climate. I've had a lot of counter offers. Companies know it's more expensive to find somebody to replace them, so they're willing to put a little bit more money on their salary, so they've dropped out. So even 15 years on, you never master it. You're never going to control it, no matter how long you've been doing the role or how good you become. So you just have to accept it. It's part of the process.
Yeah, and I think this is about a nugget that you said right at the beginning of that, about you can't kind of go walk away, you know, have a coffee, it's calmed down. It's kind of emotional regulation point number one, I think, which really helps us for setbacks and being in control of that, so that we can bounce back to do what step number two was, I think, which was, okay, what have I learned from this experience that I can apply, I can adapt and change going forward? And I think those things are, like, again, simple things, but are massively important. The way that we view a situation, is this an opportunity to do something that I can improve on next time so I get better? Or is this just, another setback, another rejection that is going to hold me back? So I think what you've been doing is maybe it was consciously, but maybe it was something that you learned, is the ability to emotionally regulate, adapt, learn from, apply, and that process has really fueled you forward. And I think that's really massively important for our own health as well, because I see quite a lot, and this happened to me as well, when we're living in that in that moment where we feel rejected or there's a setback and it doesn't feel nice, and we automatically default to our limbic center and to Frankenstein, we can't really navigate very well, can we? It's like everything's bigger, more difficult. How do I move forward from it? But just walk away, calm down, immediately activates Einstein. So, you know, these are again brilliant tips. So it's an industry that you work in, which, because it's high pressure and there's a lot of high achievers in there that make it, if you like, I also see this in other industries as well, probably also at the moment, having, you know, we've been living through this pandemic and having to adapt to things, and, you know, the stress and strain people are taking, like burnout is a real issue that I'm seeing at the moment. So what experience do you have that? Has this been something that's affected you, or do you have any tips to help avoid getting really overwhelmed, stressed, and burning yourself out?
I think there's always been elements. I do really push myself constantly in everything I do. And I think if you go back to 2012 when our first son was born, I think it gives you something else to work for. And I think that pushed me to new boundaries because I wanted to take the risk and face the falls so that I'd got either a legacy to pass to my children.
Yeah.
But you have a bigger learning curve to be able to pass down. And I think since that moment, I've always pushed myself to the nth degree. Recruitment certainly being at the top of everything that I've done. But I would say on a normal 12-month basis, I would always set myself almost kind of like a 6-month window, knowing I had a nice holiday, a 2-week holiday to get to.
Mm.
And that 2-week holiday, you have that time to basically reset on the basis you've got the next 6 months to go for Christmas. Yeah. So I've broken it into little chunks, but I know there's a reset time. We spoke a few weeks ago. So last year, I work, and our recruitment business is me and my wife. We're directors, limited company. We fell through all the kind of cracks of any help, government support or anything like that. And I left a business that I'd worked for 11 years, 6 months prior to COVID. And the plan, we had a whole plan ahead, 6 months recruiting on my own, just going back to basics. And I was going to set up a new recruitment agency and start all over again. And I was going to be a third party consultant to other recruiters. And obviously March came along and the recruitment market just stopped.
Yeah.
Nobody's taking permanent people on when we were on full lockdown.
Yeah.
And I'd got to a point where I thought, well, what do we do now? I have to find a way of producing a revenue stream that isn't permanent placements. I created or put a post out to say, how can I help recruiters out there? Because there was lots of insecurities. Most were on furlough. And this post was responded. I did 62 live Zoom calls in a week.
Wow.
Booking. And it was global. There was people there from Switzerland, Hong Kong, China, Australia, Canada, Switzerland, Singapore. And it was great. It was a great week, but found out there's lots of the same problems. It didn't matter where you were sat across the globe. So I threw myself into creating a recruitment training program. And that was long days, 7 days a week in an office where I'd basically shut myself off. And I got to about September, I think it was. And I woke up one morning, I got pins and needles in my arm. And that kind of had a few worrying signs. I put it down to the fact that I slept funny. My wife spoke to me about, I think it's about 12 o'clock in the afternoon. She said, how's your arm? And I said, yeah, it's still the same. She got me to dial 111. I was still pretty blasé, to be honest, talking to the nurse. And she carried on talking and then said, there's an ambulance on its way. Don't move. Have you got any aspirin? If you haven't, can your wife go and get you some aspirin?
Wow.
And it just kind of, I don't know, it escalated really fast. I was ambulanced to hospital. My blood pressure, I think, was 176 over 120 or something like that. Very high. They did various checks. Told me to take a week off and just kind of quieten down a little bit. Tried that. I was then back in hospital the following week. They kept me in overnight. Did MRIs, chest scans, x-rays, checked my heart, blood pressure and everything else. I'm now on medication. I have to take 3 tablets every day and try and relax a little. But I really struggle.
Yeah, and this I think is really typical. I see a lot of entrepreneurs, high achievers, often in common what we have is warrior levels of stress tolerance. And the reason I know this now is I recently had my DNA analysed and that's what mine's come out as. And I thought, woo, you know, I'm a warrior. Well, that's a real problem as well. That is a real problem because you can work, and it sounds like you're pretty similar as well. You can tolerate a lot of, you know, fast paced productivity. Like for me, my output's massive and I enjoy it and I love it.
Yeah.
But actually it can catch up with you with those physical symptoms, because I think they're like kind of three things maybe to look out for as a sign that you may be burning yourself out. Those physical symptoms that just, and that happened to me, crept up on me totally, like mentally, emotionally, I felt fine. The doctor was saying, I think you're stressed. No, I'm not stressed. But, you know, so there are physical symptoms like you've described, or maybe, you know, a racy kind of heartbeat or tightness in like your chest or in your jaw and things like that, muscle contraction and headaches. But also then I noticed with others, it may be behavioral stuff as well. So maybe they cope with drinking a bit more than they would, or a lot more than they would, or food or even drugs or things like that. But also emotional things. So I know actually when I think back, some of my emotions probably weren't like where I would normally be. So I'd get like frustrated really, really quickly.
Yeah.
And then I'd get annoyed, you know, like, oh, you know, it's kind of all that. So there are emotional maybe qualities as well that come up if you're on the process to burnout. So, yeah, I mean, thanks for sharing that, because sometimes I think, I mean, you're a very calm person. You know, when we talk, you're a very calm person, a high achiever, really successful, but it can catch up with you if you're not careful.
Yeah, it definitely crept up on me. I mean, I'll give you an example. I even took up golf. I played hockey for 20, 25 years. So I thought, again, being logical, golf is probably the next step when your knees stop working and you're perhaps not as active. And I used to get up and I would start playing golf at really early, kind of 20 past, half past seven. Yeah. And I thought 18 holes, 2.5, 3 hours to get round. Bit of me time, a bit of relaxation out in the in the wild, the fresh air.
Yeah.
And the problem with that was I was spending 2.5, 3 hours thinking about everything I need to do. And then by the time I got to the office, I was feeling like I'd wasted 3 hours. And now my list was longer because I've thought of all these things.
Yeah.
Actually,
it wasn't
necessarily helping at the time, because it was making me more concerned over the
fact that, so you weren't actually really using that as leisure time for relaxation time. Yeah.
It's finding that switch and having the downtime. Because of lockdown, I haven't had the holidays. I haven't had that time where you can reset. Everything's been 110 miles per hour. And I always take it on my own back that I suppose I'm very much a control person, in that I like things to have order.
Yes.
And if things are slightly out of sync, which obviously the pandemic definitely...
Massively,
It removes that order. And I think that created a lot of stress elements to me, because it meant I had to change how I was used to working.
Exactly. And I think you're spot on there. Because we're not really wired for like that kind of level of prolonged change. And so that in itself is kind of really dysregulating for the body, and it, you know, saps all the stress hormones and chemicals around. So it's no great surprise that I think we're seeing a lot more of this, you know, the stress, the burnout, those sorts of emotional challenges that we're experiencing too. So how are you now?
I'm good. I say I'm probably back to being as busy as ever, which I don't know whether I'm allowed to say or not, because I'm meant to be slowing down, but I just can't. I can't slow down.
It's really difficult because
I try and approach things in a different way. I've always been calm, considered, and I always tend to come across as quite a relaxed person. But I'm sat there, my brain's kind of chatting.
And
I think that's just me. I don't really know any other way.
Yeah. So I know you're incredibly busy because you have a podcast and you've got a new book coming out as well, haven't you? So briefly, just tell us where people can listen to you on the podcast. Tell us about your upcoming book and how can people connect with you?
Okay, so the podcast is called The Guest List, with me, your host, Steve Guest. You can get it on Apple and Spotify. The recordings are on YouTube as well. The new book is called A Personal Brand Story. So it's basically my journey over the last 12, 18 months and how I've gone from being perhaps just your local recruiter to being a global mentor and having the podcast and the first book that did so well. Went to the editor on, when was it, Friday?
Amazing.
So a couple of months, it should be on sale. I hang out mostly on LinkedIn, so that's generally where you'll find me if you wanted to connect.
And you are also on Instagram as well, aren't you?
I'm on Instagram.
What's your Instagram follow?
At Steve Guest.
At Steve Guest, brilliant. Well, so much gold in what you said today. Thank you so much for being on the show. It's been amazing to have you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Mojo Matters podcast with Joe Britton. Tune in again for more practical advice on how to find your mojo and how to keep it.